Hello again, friends, and welcome to another hour of entertainment as we gather around the old part of the radio. I'm your host, Corey Walker. Today I'm going to bring you two great episodes from the science fiction series X-1. X-1 ran on NBC from April 24, 1955 until January 9, 1958. NBC frequently moved this series to different time slots, preventing it from reaching the audience as it deserved. However, the writing of this series was high quality, and according to radio historian John Dunning, the series, quote, blew through NBC like a breath of fresh air. X-1 was straight space sci-fi, and sometimes the writers let the aliens win. The series took most of its stories from Galaxy Magazine, a popular contemporary science fiction magazine. Our first episode today is titled Colony and was first heard the evening of Wednesday, October 10th, 1956 on NBC. Let the countdown begin.
Countdown for blast off. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. Far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of a future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
Tonight's story, Colony, by Philip K. Dick.
The existence of Planet Blue, the fourth in orbit around a G-type sun somewhere in the Aldebaran sector, was predicted by spectroscopic analysis and spatio-mathematic equations some 50 years before an exploring mission was dispatched to it. The research team, under Commander Stella Morrison of the Colonial Administration, went into orbit around Planet Blue at 0700 standard sidereal time. Authorized procedures were followed.
Aerial photography completed, Commander.
Anything show on the plate?
Well, Masterson was suspicious of these lines towards the poles, but the angle seemed to be coincidence.
They're not artifacts.
Glacial faults. Geological survey reports no volcanism.
Mm-hmm.
The launch is back. Dodge has a landing site pinpointed. Preliminary atmospheric tests look good. There's a 0.7 bulge in oxygen, but it's just enough to make you feel good. Looks like an open-air job. No pressure suits or condenser, man.
Well, that's precisely what they thought on Centauri 1. And the whole expedition was wiped out by spores.
Of course, I was assuming a favorable biocheck.
Mm-hmm.
Preliminary photographic survey, Mr. Wood.
Thank you, Dodge. Do you want them played back here? We have them transcribed to tape.
If you please, Lieutenant.
393. Al, pipe the photo tapes up here on 324.
Looks like a green world, all right. Punch up the tape, if you please, Lieutenant.
All orbital checks proved positive. The atmosphere and gravity Earth normal to three places on the Grayson scale. And the exploratory research ship lowered itself by the Meyerson-Lay atmospheric skip method, came into a stall-tail landing just before sunset on a day marked in the logs as Planet Fall Zero. The hatches remained sealed as a two-mile perimeter was scanned by direct instrumentation. Major Lawrence Hall of Biosurvey reported EEG sweeps to the bridge.
Of course, it isn't conclusive. We've run into life forms that didn't broadcast a brainwave at all. The Gryllodont lizard on Ganymede. Skull acted as an effective shielding due to a heavy lead constituent in the body chemistry.
Major Hall, I am not interested in a lecture on extraterrestrial zoology. Is there or is there not life within the range of your instruments?
Well, I'm sorry, Stella. The readings show no electrical brain activity whatsoever, and that covers life down to the level of invertebrates. There may be a few worms turning out there, and unless they are thinking awfully hard about something, we wouldn't pick them up.
Well, thank you. I want preliminary drones out for sampling. How long do you think that will take?
Well, a thorough job, take about 2 weeks.
I have a schedule, Major. How long do you can give me a protective Schedule C clearance?
2 days. And I ought to check airborne spores and microorganisms.
Carry on, Major.
All right, Stella. I'll let you know if I turn up any special diseases on Planet Blue.
Drone sample missiles were dispatched at sunrise. Air scoops, ground samplers, and vegetation choppers returned to base, and the bio team instituted full prescribed tests. Immediately identifiable airborne dangers were ruled out. Outside of the possible allergenic action of pollens, Planet Blue was ruled safe for normal exploratory procedures, and the real work of the survey was gotten underway.
Here's the morning report, Commander. 4 in sick bay, 3 ordered to light duty.
What happened?
Well, last night was liquor ration.
Oh.
Survey teams out in the field. Bio crew under Major Hall. Agronomy, ecological, geological, and deep map teams out.
Any reports back?
Deep map seems to think there's petroleum over to the north, and agronomy reports if you dropped a seed in this soil, you'd have to jump back to keep from being knocked over by the plant.
Mm-hmm. Sounds pretty good.
Commander, Blue is about as likely a spot for colonization as has been turned up since Harvey's planted in 27.
Well, they'll be glad to hear that in Central. How long do you think until we can send back a clearance?
I've checked with department chiefs. They all estimate about 2 or 3 days more until they're satisfied. All except Bio.
Well, why is Major Hall dragging his feet?
I don't know.
Well, find out. And in the meantime, I'm going to call a staff meeting. Every day we can save on our report is important. If Blue is suitable for colonization, I don't want to waste a minute.
By planet fall, plus 3 weeks, all departments had reported favorably except biology. Ecological survey pointed out the difficulty involved in the necessity of importing animal life, but this problem had already been met in the colonization of Gamma 2 and 3, when an entire ecology had been transported in frozen gene banks and fertilized and incubated on the site. Biology, however, still withheld a favorable report.
Look, Larry.
What is the secret, Stella? Cold formality on the bridge and Larry when you're in my lab?
Well, I'm serious. Well, I've just gotten an official query from Central. They want to fish or cut bait on Blue. Your department is the only one holding it up. We're 2 weeks behind schedule.
And the first colony on Vishnu was right on schedule and 7,000 died of green spots.
That was before the full bio check technique was worked out.
My dear, do you know how many different microorganisms there are in a cup full of dirt?
I'm not a freshman student of biology.
Oh, dear. And I was hoping I could tempt you into some field work.
Someday, Larry, you're going to make some remark in front of some junior officers or even enlisted personnel, and I'm going to have to call you on it.
Afraid for your dignity, my dear?
Look, I'm in charge of this expedition. My dignity happens to be a function of command, and as such, it's a survival factor.
Ah, well, then you had better take it easy at officers' mess. You know, I saw two biomates watching you climbing the ladder to the bridge. Do you know what their affectionate name for you is?
Major Hall. I'm serious. I want a bio clearance as soon as possible.
And you will get it. As soon as possible.
And when will that be?
When I'm satisfied.
Are the bugs here so dangerous that you're afraid of them?
No, on the contrary. We have yet to find the harmful life form.
Well, you didn't report that. If there are no harmful life forms...
No life. No disease germs. No malignant virus.
Well, then what are you waiting for?
There should be. There should be at least one little fellow who could give you a common cold.
Look, sociology section found no native narcotic plant life. And inasmuch as there is no humanoid life, there is no bootlegging, gambling, immorality, and pornography either. By analogy, that would be a good reason not to colonize. Is that the idiotic logic you're following?
Microbiology is a little different, Stella. And anyway, what is the rush? Blue is something different. There's something peaceful in the air. Why rush to bring picnickers who'll drop candy wrappers and fill the pools up with empty beer cans?
Larry, I have a planned board conference in 10 minutes. If you don't bring in some kind of a report by then, I'll have to supersede you under a Section 23.
Ah, yes, that's what happened on Vishnu, isn't it? Followed by Greenspot, and the wagons dragged the corpses out of the colony street.
Never mind that, Major. I want a report.
In the biology section lab, Major Lawrence Hall continued to examine tissue samples from lower fauna and flora samples brought in from Planet Blue. He settled a container of prepared slides and flipped the switch on the electron microscope. Major Hall slid the first slide on the stage of the microscope and adjusted the focus knob.
Come on. All right, come on, kid. Eat something.
The microorganisms, a form of rotifer, displayed none of the characteristics of ferocity and aggression which were normal on several dozen other planets. Presently, however, Major Hall stopped whistling. Inasmuch as the two eyepieces of his microscope twisted suddenly around his windpipe and started to strangle him. Hall tore them, but they dug relentlessly into his throat, steel prongs closing like the claws of a trap. With a convulsive effort, he managed to break free and fling the microscope from him.
Oh, that's crazy. I'm going to let go of my leg.
He kicked the microscope loose and drew his blaster. As the microscope scuttled away, rolling on its coarse adjustment knob, he fired. The microscope disappeared in a cloud of metallic particles. The PANS board of the research team was assembled in the officer's library. Commander Stella Morrison was outlining plans on a detailed aerial survey map.
This long, flat area is ideal for the actual city. It has an adequate watershed in the hills here, and weather conditions vary sufficiently to give the settlers something to talk about. There are large deposits of various minerals. The colonists can set up their own factories. They won't have to do any importing. Over here is the biggest forest on the planet. If they have any sense, they'll leave it. But if they want to make newspapers out of it, that's not our concern. Now, all reports are in except bio, and I think that before long we'll be getting...
Stop it.
Major Hall, may I remind you that when the consul is in session, no one is permitted to interrupt...
You come to my lab. Look, Hall, if you're not feeling well, you look a little sick.
Yes, well, I should be. My microscope just tried to strangle me.
Oh? Oh, I see.
It almost got me, but I blasted it. But that's not the worst.
It isn't?
No. The microscope is still there. After I blasted it, I found it under the lab bench. Untouched.
Look, Major, you sure you don't need a psych test?
Well, I don't know. I suppose it does sound a little...
You look post-trauma to me.
Huh? Oh. Well, you're right. Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Commander.
Put Major Hall on psycho report. I think we'll have to proceed to order colonization here without him.
Major Hall proceeded to Psych Center, and inserting his ID card in the robot Neo Rorschach machine, he placed his hands on the contacts and activated the searching Gestalt circuits. Presently, the green light flashed, indicating tentative diagnosis. Major Hall hit the response key.
Severe disturbance. Instability ratio above 10.
And that's over danger, isn't it?
Yes. 8 is danger. 10 is unusual, especially for a person of your index. Your norm is 4.
Yeah, I know.
I require more data to determine whether this unusual instability ratio is an aberrant reaction or is normal survival oriented.
Well, I can't tell you anymore.
It is illegal to hold back information during a robo-psych test. You will deliberately distort diagnosis, which is punishable by 6 months forfeiture of pay and allowances or such other penalty as a court-martial may direct.
Thanks a heap. Now look, do you record a high degree of unbalance for me?
There is a high degree of psychic disorganization. But what it signifies, or its etiology, I am unable to determine without further data.
Yeah. Okay, well, just take a tip from me. Stay away from homicidal microscopes.
That is an interesting Freudian slip. You undoubtedly mean homicidal maniac, not microscope. This indicates a possible maladjustment in the area of your specialty.
Why don't you go grease your
I will consider that suggestion.
Major Hall returned to the biosection lab and tested the atmosphere near the place where he had fired his blast gun at the microscope. The analysis showed a high density of metallic particles colloidally suspended in the air. In a state of confusion, with an emotional distress quotient of at least 0.742, he stripped off his uniform and entered the shower.
Oh. Oh, well, you can't expect anybody to believe a story like that. I must be off my rocker.
Major Hall stepped out of the shower, reached for one of the towels on the rack. The towel wrapped around his head and yanked him against the wall. Rough cloth pressed over his mouth and nose. He fought wildly, pulling away. All at once, the towel let go. Major Hall crawled out of the shower and proceeded to dress. His belt, heavy canvas with reinforced metal links, tried to get him around the waist and crush him. The belt, being a heavy-duty issue, was strong, and they rolled on the floor until Hall was able to reach his blaster. He threw himself down in a chair to regain his breath. The arms of the chair started to close around him, but this time he was ready.
Major, I don't believe you were announced.
Look, Commander, Stella.
You're armed. You know the regulations
of... Sorry, Stella, this is important.
Well, what do you want? I have a report here from the robo-psych tester. It says you've hit a ratio of 10 within the last 24-hour period. We've known each other for a long time. Larry, what's happening to
Stella,
you?
Stella, I told you. A little while ago, my microscope tried to strangle me. Then when I was getting out of the shower, a bath towel tried to smother me. I got by that. And while I was dressing, my belt...
Wood, in here on the double.
And I finally blasted that. And then an armchair beside...
Yes, Commander.
Stand by a moment.
Stella, will you listen to me? This is serious. Ordinary objects suddenly turning lethal. Maybe this is what we've been looking for. Maybe this is...
Your microscope tried to kill you?
I told you, its stems got me here around the windpipe.
No one else saw this happen.
No. I blasted it, and then I found it again, perfectly all right.
I see. Wood.
Yes, ma'am.
Get two guards and take Major Hall down to Captain Taylor in sick bay. Have him confined until he can be sent back to Terra for examination.
Listen, Stella...
Sorry, Major. You can't prove this story, and we'll just have to assume it's a psychotic projection on your part. And we can't afford to have any psychotics running around loose on this planet. Wood, carry on.
You'll be all right, Hall. Back on Earth, they can clear a thing like this up in a few weeks.
Yeah, maybe you're right, Wood. Maybe I'm just out of my mind.
Here we are. Captain Taylor! Captain Taylor! He should be in. Captain! The hatch is locked. Taylor! What's the matter?
That scatter rug is choking. Turn and pull. Open up! Quick before he's crushed! Grab that rug!
Now hear this. Now hear this. General alarm. General alarm. Emergency station. Emergency station. Condition red. Sidearms will be issued to all personnel. General alarm.
Captain Taylor tells me the rug came from Terra. His grandmother braided it.
That's what I was trying to tell you. It was not the rug that attacked them.
Then what was it?
Something that looked like this rug. And it was something that looked like a microscope that went for me. And the towel and the belt.
You mean there's some life form that can imitate anything?
Yes, it seems so. And it's deadly.
Charlie, general alarm. Get up out of that sack. Hey, what'd you do with my gloves?
Oh. Hey, where'd I get two pairs? Well, maybe you mean you might... No. One pair of gloves is the same as the other. Hey, these gloves are moving. How do you like that? These
Oxygen gloves are going for my blast pistol. Charlie, this one of your crazy electronic gags? Did you rig my gloves? Hey, look out for that pistol! Look out!
Commander, there's another casualty. Lieutenant Dodd.
What happened?
I don't know. He seems to have shot himself.
Oh, no.
Stella, I think that I have something.
Dodge is dead.
Look, we know that this thing can camouflage itself. It can imitate any object it leans up against. All right, now, listen to this.
Larry, we've got
this to... is the answer. It's a tape from Captain Galt. He was out on bio survey. He had a float mic on. He was talking to the operator at base. Now, listen to this.
Head for home now. What's this emergency about? Hourglass Stella having hysterics? That's funny. I could swear I parked my bucket over by those trees. Well, here anyway. Eat up some coffee for me. I'll be in a couple. That's funny. There's another bucket over by the trees. Where'd this one come from? Let me out. The thing's stuck. Folding up around me. Joe, get a squad out here. Joe. Acid, I can't get out. It's digestive fluid. Get somebody out here before.
His transmission just stopped. All right, now we're up against some organic form of life, and there should be some way to destroy it. We've already blasted a few, but we don't know how many more there are. Maybe it's an infinitely divisible substance, some kind of protoplasm.
We've had over 12 casualties reported, and there's still 5 teams out in the field.
All right, it's a lethal life form. Now, that explains why we found everything else harmless. Nothing could compete with this. We have mimic plants of our own, the twisty slug on Venus, but nothing that goes this far.
It can be killed, though. You said that yourself.
If it can be found. You can't tell. Clothes, rugs, drapes, chairs. We can't tell which is which. We've got to try to find some poison, some spray that will destroy them wholesale.
Oh, no.
What's the matter?
In the corner. I never noticed 2 briefcases over there before. There was only one. I see. How are we going to know?
Shortly after the final casualty report of 30 dead and 12 wounded, Major Hall sealed off the bio quarters and moved in with a team from chem section, all dressed in corrosive-resistant suits.
Well, I'll make sure that you've got a tight seal on the neck joint.
What are you going to do, Major?
I've got a combination of hydrogen and arsenic under pressure, arsine gas. That'll give us an idea how much they've infiltrated. Arsine is deadly to humans, so check your helmet. Now, Sergeant, I don't want any panic blasting. Arsine is inflammable. All right. Release the valve.
As the gas filled the room, the first to go was a filing cabinet, which melted and oozed to the floor, followed by pipettes, Bunsen burners, bell jars, and test tubes. The lab was sealed off and a meeting held in Commander Morrison's quarters.
Well, it's protoplasm, all right. You could see that when the mimic shape melted. It was a cell nucleus as big as your hand. May resemble the simple unicellular protozoa. Of course, gigantic in size compared to microorganisms.
Can we spray them?
Arsine disturbed them. And I suppose enough might kill them. But we haven't got that much. We can't flood the planet. We wouldn't be able to use our blasters, and it's lethal to humans.
We'll have to pull out.
Stella, I'm afraid you don't quite understand. We can't take the chance of carrying them back to the system disguised as a boot or a towel or anything. And they seem to multiply by binary fission. Wouldn't take long to overrun Earth and the rest of the system.
If we stay here, they'll pick us off one by one.
We could have arsine brought in or some other poison, but that would destroy most of the other life on the planet along with it.
Then we'll have to burn the planet clean. Wood?
Yes, ma'am.
Set up a call to system monitor. I'm going to get the unit off here, out of danger. After that, we can work out the best way of cleaning off this planet.
You run the risk of taking them back to Terra.
Can they imitate higher life forms? Can they masquerade as humans?
Apparently not. They seem to be limited to inorganic subjects.
Then we'll go back without any inorganic materials.
But our clothes, they can imitate the synthetic fibers, belts, gloves, boots.
We're not taking our clothes. We're going back without anything at all.
Oh. Oh, I see.
Get me a beam to central monitor immediately.
The nearest cruiser was 2 light hours away, Captain Daniel Davis commanding. Tight beam communication was established after coordinates were flashed from central monitor.
This is Captain Davis. Can you read me?
I read you. Commander Morrison here. Captain, you are to make a planetfall as soon as possible at coordinates to be supplied you. We are going to board your ship naked.
Naked?
That's right.
Well...
When will you land?
About 1,500 hours, I'd say.
Captain, would it be possible for your men to...
I'll have my crew below decks. We'll land on robot control.
Thank you. Wood, sign off the transmission.
Yes, ma'am.
There was some objection among the enlisted personnel, particularly in the women's quarters. The ship landed at 1,200 hours, 3 hours sooner than expected.
All hands disrobe immediately. All personnel report to field, ready to embark.
So soon? I didn't hear the ship land.
It's there, all right. We'd better go. Larry.
Mm-hmm.
Larry, you go ahead. I'd rather get ready alone.
Parked in the center of the landing field was a cruiser, its hull pitted and dented by meteor strikes. It lay motionless, with no sign of life aboard. A crowd of naked people was moving across the field, blinking in the bright sunlight. Commander Stella Morrison, without any sign of rank apparent, paused on the ramp and spoke to Major Lawrence Hall beside her.
Larry.
Yeah? What is it?
I'm scared.
Why?
I don't know.
Psychological reaction. Forget it. It's a reaction to nudity carried over from early childhood. Come on, we're holding up the line.
Larry, I want to go back.
Stella, look, now at least Davis kept his promise. There are no enlisted men lining the hatches to enjoy the view. It's dark in there. There's nothing to worry about. Come on. Up you go.
The last of the research team filed into the interior of the ship, and the hatch closed behind them. At exactly 1,500 hours, Captain Daniel Davis landed his ship in the center of the field. Automatic relays opened the main lock hatch and lowered the ramp. Davis and his staff sat in the control cabin waiting.
Well, how do you like that? Where are they? Well, maybe the whole fool thing is a joke. We've waited an hour already.
They waited. And waited. But no one came.
You have just heard X-1 presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, with this month's features Double Dare by Robert Silverberg, which demonstrates that pride can lead to much worse than a fall. It can put a man out on a limb and keep him there. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Colony, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Philip K. Dick and adapted for radio by Ernest Kenoy. Featured in the cast were Frederica Chandler, John Larkin, James Stevens, Larry Robinson, Bill Quinn, and Alan Bergman. Your narrator was Norman Rose. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
have to admit, I was expecting a more dramatic ending for that story. You're listening to the episode Colony from X-1. Colony was first heard the evening of Wednesday, October 10, 1956, on NBC. Like all X-1 episodes, the stories are written for adults, yet the episodes weren't overly frightening, unlike thriller series like Inner Sanctum. Next, I'm going to feature another episode of X-1. The next episode dates to Tuesday, September 11, 1956, and is titled Lifeboat Mutiny. Enjoy.
Now stay tuned for X-1 on NBC. After tonight's broadcast, X-1, the adult science fiction show, will not be heard until Wednesday, September 26th. It will be heard on Wednesdays thereafter. For the exact time, consult your local newspaper. And now, X-1.
Countdown for blastoff. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
This week, the police chiefs of the country are meeting in Chicago for the 63rd annual conference of the International Association of Chiefs of Police. Tonight, X-1 is proud to salute them as we present The Lifeboat Mutiny by Robert Sheckley.
We should have known better. In a way, we were asking for it, but frankly, we were short of credits, and beggars can't be choosers. As a rule, I don't like second-hand equipment, not if I have to trust my life to it. But Joe, the interstellar junk man, can be pretty persuasive. He has an air of confidence when he walks down between the rows of antique jalopies on his lot and pats an airlock door lovingly or kicks at the ground gyros to show how firm they are. Joe exudes the way trees drip sap in the spring. And if you get too close, a little rubs off on you.
Yeah, you see, solid as a rock. Look at that plating. I'm telling you, this boat is a real buy.
Well, she looks pretty old.
Sure, she's old.
Now, don't give us that story about it belonging to a little old lady who used it to flip to church on Sundays.
Now, look, boys, I'm not trying to unload something on you. I don't stand to make a nickel on this, but tell me the truth. Did you ever hear sweeter engines? And look at those servos.
Pretty old.
And that hull. I bet it's 500 years old and not a spot of corrosion on it. I'm telling you, you're lucky. It's a coincidence, you two fellas coming in. You need a lifeboat. And sitting right here waiting for you. Like you was made for each other. Is this baby.
She certainly does seem rather nice. What do you think about it, Dave?
It does look pretty good. It's about what we need for the ocean survey work on Trident. But you know, Joe.
Nah, they just don't build them this way anymore. Look at that propulsion unit. You couldn't dent it with a trip hammer. And note the capacity of the cooling system.
It looks good, but some of these old machines, you know, I just want to make absolutely sure it's safe.
Safe? Safe, he asked me if it's safe.
Is it?
Now, step inside. Go ahead, step inside. All right. Push that button. Right there on the instrument panel.
This one?
Hey. I am Lifeboat 324A.
Hey, the darn thing talks.
Yeah, and in English, too.
It's equipped with a universal translator. It's completely automatic. I told you, they just don't build them this way anymore. Go ahead. Push the button again.
I am Lifeboat 324A. My primary purpose is to preserve those within me from peril and to maintain them in good health. At present, I am only partially activated.
Could anything be safer? This is no senseless hunk of metal. This boat will look after you. This boat cares.
I don't know. The idea of an emotional machine always gets me. I can't even stand those robot maitre d's. They keep slobbering over you every time you go into a restaurant with their tubes just pouring kindness and consideration.
Ah, you're a reactionary. We'll take it.
You won't be sorry. Boys, you just bought yourselves a lifeboat.
Joe delivered this assurance in the frank and open tones that had helped make him a millionaire several times over. It wasn't that he was dishonest. Far from it. All the flotsam he collected from anywhere in the universe worked. But ancient machines often have their own idea of how a job should be done. They tend to get peevish when forced into another routine.
Well, there she goes, Lifeboat 324A. I got her down in the afterhold. I think she's in perfect condition. You know, it's just what we need for those oceans on Trident.
I hope so. The last thing I bought from Joe was an electric razor. Only it turned out that it came from Deneb 3, where they are slightly reptilian. And an electric razor is used to help them change their skin in the hot months. If you remember, I was in the hospital 3 months, and after the skin grafts, I don't know my ears from my elbow. This job we were on was to survey the planet Trident for a real estate speculator who bought it for subdivision. Trident was about the size of Mars, but with a far better climate. There was no native indigenous population, no poisonous plants, and no germ-borne diseases. As a matter of fact, apart from one small island and one small polar ice cap, the entire planet was covered with water. There was no real shortage of land. You could wade across some of Trident's several seas. Our firm had been hired to survey and plan a little mountain raising because the sector council frowned on selling building lots under 4 feet of water. We landed on Trident and launched the lifeboat.
Okay, I got the sandwiches in the water. Ready to cast off?
Aye, aye, sir. All mooring lines are on board.
All right, let's crank this swan boat up and get going.
Well, push that button.
Aye, aye.
I am Lifeboat 324A. My primary purpose is to preserve those within me from peril and to maintain them in good health. At present, I am only partially activated. For full activity, press button 2.
Now, there it is, right next to the first one. Well? Something's going on back there. Sounds like motors warming up. Hey, that sounds like a short circuit somewhere. You know there's no wheel on this thing?
Oh, wait a minute. There's got to be some kind of tiller or control.
Well, you look. That's all there are, two buttons.
Well, then maybe she controls telepathically.
I'll try it.
Hey, 324A, go ahead slowly.
Ah, there she goes. That's it.
Starboard a little.
Wait a minute. I still don't like the sound of that. I bet there's a short somewhere. I'm going down to look for it with a circuit tester.
Don't louse anything up. I like a boat that works this way. Gives me a sense of power.
Hey, 324A, full speed ahead.
Arnold disappeared into the bilge with a circuit tester, and I handled the survey. Actually, our machines did all the work, tracing the major faults in the ocean bottom, locating the most promising volcanoes. When the survey was complete, the next stage would be turned over to the subcontractor. He would wire the volcanoes, seed the faults, and touch the whole thing off. After that, there'd be enough dry land on Trident for anybody. Now, by mid-afternoon, I figured we could knock off for a while. We ate our sandwiches, took a drink of water from the canteen, and then had ourselves a swim in Trident's clear, green water.
Hey, give me a hand up.
Yeah.
That was very refreshing.
Oh, yeah. I'll have to get this grease off with sandpaper, but I think I found the trouble. You see, the leads to the primary activator have been removed and the power cable's been cut.
Well, why would anyone do that?
Well, it might have been part of the decommissioning, but I got it hooked up now. Go ahead, hit the second button. Might as well have this thing working right.
Okay, here she goes.
Response tapes, both psychological and physical, have been prepared by the best scientific minds in all drones.
Ah, that's more like it, huh? Gives you a feeling of confidence, doesn't it?
I suppose so. Where is Drone?
Gentlemen, try to think of me not as an unfeeling mechanism, but as your friend and comrade in arms. I understand how you feel. You have seen your ship go down, cruelly riddled by the implacable Hagen.
What ship? What's it talking about?
You have crawled aboard me, dazed, gasping from the poisonous fumes of water, half dead.
Oh, no, wait a minute. You mean that swim we took? You got it all wrong. We were just surveying.
Half dead, shocked, wounded, morale low. You were a little frightened, perhaps, and well, you might be, separated from the drone fleet and adrift upon an alien planet. A little fear is nothing to be ashamed of, gentlemen. But this is war. And war is a cruel business, and we have no alternative but to drive the barbaric again across space.
There must be a reasonable explanation for all this.
Probably an old television script got mixed up in its response bank.
We better give it a complete overhaul. We can't listen to that stuff all day.
Well, we're about a quarter of a mile from the island. Ah, I'll tell you what. I'll take it down and clean the goo out of the contacts when we get there.
Hey. What's going on?
We're stopping. Hey, lifeboat.
Quiet. Calm. Trust in me. I am scanning the island.
What's he talking about, scanning me?
Better humor it. Lifeboat, that island's okay. We checked it personally.
Perhaps you did, but in modern lightning-quick warfare, drone senses cannot be trusted. They are too limited, too prone to interpret what they wish. Electronic senses, on the other hand, are emotionless, eternally vigilant, and infallible within their limits.
But there isn't anything there.
I perceive a foreign spaceship on the island.
Oh, that's our ship.
It has no drone markings.
Well, it hasn't any enemy markings either. I painted it myself.
In war, we must assume that what is not ours is the enemy's.
Oh.
I understand your desire to set foot on land again. But I take into account factors that a drone motivated by his emotions would overlook. Consider the apparent emptiness of the strategic bit of land. The unmarked spaceship put temptingly out for bait. The fact that our fleet is no longer in this vicinity.
All right, that's enough. Now, I'm tired of arguing with you. Go directly to that island. That's an order.
I cannot obey that order. You are unbalanced. From your harrowing escape from death.
All right. Enough of this nonsense. I'm just going to take that cutoff switch and...
Come to your senses, gentlemen. Only the decommissioning officer is empowered to turn me off. For your own safety, I must warn you not to touch any of my controls. You are mentally unbalanced. Later, when our position is safer, I will administer to you. Now my full energies must be devoted towards detection and escape from the enemy.
Where are we going?
To rejoin the drone fleet as soon as I can find it.
Over the empty seas of Trident for the rest of the afternoon and far into the night. At about midnight, we sat in the cabin sharing our last sandwich. A lifeboat was still rushing madly over the waves, its every electronic sense alert, searching for a fleet that had existed 500 years ago upon an entirely different planet.
Oh, why didn't I pack more sandwiches?
Do you ever hear of these drones?
Yeah, vaguely. They were non-human, lizard-evolved creatures. Mm. Yeah, they lived on the sixth planet of some little system near Capella. The race died out over a century ago.
Mm-hmm. And the Hagen. What about them?
Also lizards, same story. Mm. It wasn't a very important war, you know. All the combatants are gone except this lifeboat, apparently.
And us. We've been drafted as drone soldiery. You think we can reason with this, Tubb?
No, I don't see how. As far as this boat is concerned, the war is still on. It can only interpret data in terms of that premise.
It's probably listening in on us now.
No, I don't think so. Hmm? See, it's not really a mind reader. Its perception senses are geared only to thoughts aimed specifically at it.
Yes, sirree. They just don't build them this way anymore. Oh, I wish I could get my hands on Joe.
Well, you know, it's actually a very interesting situation. The machine is acting very logically upon no longer existent conditions. Therefore, you could say that the machine is the victim of a systematized delusion.
You mean the lifeboat is just plain insane?
Well, I believe paranoia would be the proper designation. Ah, but it'll end pretty soon.
Why?
It's obvious. The boat's prime objective is to keep us alive. Our sandwiches are gone, and the only other food is on the island. I figure it'll have to take a chance and go back.
Gentlemen, at present, I am unable to locate the drone fleet. Therefore, I am turning back to scan the island again. Fortunately, there are no enemies in this immediate area, so I can devote myself to your care.
Oh, you see, it's about time you got around to us. We're hungry.
Feed us.
Of course. Immediately. There you are. On the tray.
What's that?
That looks like clay.
Oh, it smells like machine oil. Hey, what's it supposed to be?
That is giesel. Hmm? It's the staple diet of the drone people. I can prepare it in 16 different ways.
Oh. Try it.
All right. It tastes like clay coated with machine oil. We can't eat that.
Of course you can. An adult drone consumes 5.3 pounds of giesel a day and cries for more.
Now listen, we are not drones. We are humans, an entirely different species. The war you think you're fighting ended 500 years ago. We can't eat giesel. Our food is on the island.
Ah, yes. Your delusion is a common one among fighting men. It is an escape fantasy, a retreat from an intolerable situation. Gentlemen, I beg you, face reality.
You face reality, or I'll have you dismantled bolt by bolt.
Threats do not disturb me. I know what you've been through. Possibly you've suffered some brain damage from your exposure to poisonous water.
Poisonous? To drones.
If absolutely necessary, I am also equipped to perform physical brain therapy. It is a drastic measure, but there can be no coddling in time of war. You see? You need not worry. All my scalpels are razor sharp and ready for immediate action.
Oh, scalpels, huh? Well, we're feeling better already. It's a fine-looking batch of giesel, isn't it, Arnold?
Oh, delicious.
Nothing is too good for our boys in uniform.
Mm.
Do try a little.
Oh, that's wonderful. Oh, that's delicious.
Good. I am moving toward the island now, and I promise you, in a little while, you will be more comfortable.
Why?
The temperature here is unbearably hot. It is amazing you haven't gone into a coma. Any other drone would have. Soon I'll have it down to drone norm of 20 degrees below zero. And now I'll play our national anthem.
Arnold?
What?
I'm cold.
Well, you should be very comfortable. Drones live at 20 below zero. We're drones and no back talk.
Those cooling tubes are all frosted up.
Yeah, I just wrote my name in frost in the porthole. Hey, wait a minute.
Hmm?
Wait a minute. I got an idea. Just follow my lead.
Why not? Lead on, fellow drone.
Give me the campaign.
What are you doing?
Just going to get a little exercise. Got to stay fit, you know.
That is true.
Here you are, boy. Catch.
Look out, that canteen's heavy.
Just throw it right back, boy. Just heave it right in. Come on, let's see your curve.
Be careful with that receptacle. It's filled with a deadly poison. Water.
Oh, we'll be careful. Here we go.
Bad shot, old man.
Oh, how careless of me. I seem to have broken the cooling tubes. Cooling fluid all over the floor.
I should have taken precaution against internal accidents. It won't happen again. But the situation is very serious. I cannot repair the cooling tube myself. I'm unable to properly cool the boat.
Say, that's tough. Now, if you'll just drop us on the island...
That is impossible. My first duty is to preserve your lives. And you couldn't live long in the climate of this planet. But I'm going to take necessary precautions to ensure your safety.
What are you going to do?
There is no time to waste. I will scan the island once more. If our drone forces are not present, we will go to the one place on the planet that can sustain drone life.
What place?
The southern polar ice cap. The climate there is almost ideal. 30 degrees below zero. And, of course, I must guard against any further internal accidents. So, I will lock you gentlemen in the cabin.
Think.
I am thinking. Nothing's coming out.
We've got to get off when he reaches the island. It'll be our last chance.
Now, look. We know his internal scanning isn't very good. When we reach the island, maybe we could cut his power cable.
Oh, you couldn't get within 5 feet of it. He's got an electric charge on all the controls.
I am now scanning the island.
Place looks fine today.
Oh, sure does. I'll bet our forces are dug in underground.
They are not. I scanned to a depth of 100 feet.
Well, under the circumstances, I think we should examine it a little more carefully.
It is deserted. I cannot let you endanger your lives by going ashore. Drone needs her soldiers, especially sturdy, heat-resistant types like you.
We like this climate.
Spoken like a patriot. I know you must be suffering, but now I am going to the South Pole to give you veterans the rest you deserve.
Wait a minute. You don't understand. We're operating under special orders. We weren't supposed to disclose them to any vessel below the rank of Super Dreadnought. We're a suicide squad.
Yes, yes, that's right. Especially trained for hot climate war.
Our orders are to land and secure that island for the drone forces.
I didn't know that.
You weren't supposed to. After all, you're only a lifeboat.
Land us at once.
I couldn't guess, you know. All right. We'll head for the island.
Arnold, it's going to work.
Why not, as long as we tell him the truth?
The beach is only 50 yards away.
No. No.
No what?
I cannot do it.
What do you mean? This is war. Orders.
I know, but I cannot obey. A different type of vessel should have been chosen for this mission. But not a lifeboat.
You must think of our country. Think of the barbaric Hagen.
It is electronically impossible for me to carry out your orders. My prime directive is to protect my occupants from harm. That order is stamped on my every tape, giving priority above all others. I cannot let you go to your certain death.
You'll be court-martialed for this. I'll have you broken down to a dinghy.
I regret to say I must operate within my limitations. I must take you to the safety of the South Pole.
Listen, you crazy tin can. Let me at those controls. I'll...
Please, do not attempt any more destruction. I know how you feel.
Wait a minute, Arnold, old friend. Since we cannot accomplish our mission, we cannot ever again face our comrades. Death before dishonor. Hand me the canteen.
No, don't. That's water. It is a deadly poison. Don't. Don't.
Too late. Arnold, it's your turn.
We, who are about to die, salute you. We die for glorious Rome. That goes for me, too.
Speak to me. Speak to me.
Lie still, you idiot.
There is no known antidote. If only I could contact the hospital ship. Speak to me. Are you still alive? Answer me. Here. Here. Perhaps if you eat some giesel. Dead. 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 I will now read the burial service. Great Spirit of the universe, take into your custody the souls of these your servants. Although they died by their own hand, still it was in the service of their country, fighting for home and hearth. Judge them not harshly for their impious deed. Rather, blame the spirit of war that inflames and destroys the spirit of all Drome. And now, by the authority vested in me, by the Drome fleet, and with all reverence, I commend their bodies to the deep.
Ow!
Shut up.
Accept them, O ocean, for many brave hearts are at slumber in the deep.
Float quietly.
What's the lifeboat doing? It's still hanging around.
Just pray the drones didn't believe in cremation.
Sleep quietly, brave spirits. I will now play the drone national anthem.
Well, there she goes.
Where?
To the South Pole. To wait for the drone fleet.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features The Man Who Ate the World by Frederick Pohl. This is the story of a civilization which flowed with milk and honey, and of a man whose tragedy was that he had not drowned at birth. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you The Lifeboat Mutiny, a story from the pages of Galaxy, written by Robert Sheckley and adapted for radio by Ernest Kenoy. Featured in the cast were Leon Janney, Mandel Kramer, William Redfield, and John McGovern. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
I don't think I've ever heard of a free-thinking lifeboat before. You're listening to the X-1 episode Lifeboat Mutiny, first heard on Tuesday evening, September 11, 1956. The story was taken from Galaxy Magazine, a popular science fiction serial published in 1950 to 1980 and now freely available on archive.org. I'm afraid my time with you is almost up. If you'd like to get in touch with me, here's how you can do it. You may email me at opr@telus.net, T-E-L-U-S, or you may write to me at Old Parlor Radio, 2080 15th Avenue, Prince George, B.C., Victor 2 Mike, Wendigo 1. From the CFAS studios in Prince George, I'm Corey Walker. Have a great week.